The first time I mixed cadmium orange on my palette, I was in his gallery, and he was watching me from across the room, not watching the way a stranger watches, watching the way someone watches when they have already decided something about you and are waiting for you to figure it out. He said, when I looked up, "That color is yours. I've seen 100 painters try it. Nobody lands it the way you do." I filed it as a compliment. I had 32 years and 6 months of rent behind me, and no representation, and a body of work that had been seen by perhaps 200 people in total. A compliment from Elliot Marsh was not nothing. He owned 3 galleries. The main space was in the West Village. White walls and good light. And the kind of clientele that did not look at price tags before they asked about provenance. He had been in the business for 22 years. He knew people. More than that, he knew how to position people, how to introduce a painter to a collector in a sentence that changed what the collector thought they needed. I had watched him do it at the opening, where we met. He said 4 words about a woman's textile work, and the man she was talking to bought 2 pieces before he had finished his wine. That was the skill. Not manipulation in any recognizable form, just fluency in a language I did not speak yet. I told myself I wanted to learn that language. That is where it started. He offered representation 3 weeks after we met. Not a formal contract right away. He said he wanted to see how the relationship felt first, which I understood as a reasonable approach to a professional relationship, and which I later understood as a tactic. No contract meant no paper trail of what was agreed. No paper trail meant that when expectations shifted, there was no record of what the original expectations had been. At the time I thought, this is how the art world works. Relationships before documents, trust before structure. I had heard this framing before. I did not have anyone in my life who had been through it to tell me what it meant in practice. The first show he gave me was in his second gallery, a smaller space in Tribeca. 8 pieces. Everything sold in 3 weeks. He called to tell me. And his voice had something in it that sounded like pride. And I held the phone and felt something I had been trying to produce in myself for 6 years. I had made work that people wanted. I was visible. The cadmium orange painting, a large canvas, the piece I had mixed that color for, sold to a collector in London for 4 times what I had priced it. Elliot said he had repriced it himself before the opening. He said my instinct on price was too low. He said I needed to learn to value what I made. I accepted this. He was right that I had underpriced it. He was right that I had a habit of discounting my own work as a reflex. What I did not notice was that the repricing had happened without a phone call, without a question, without my consent. The price of my work had been changed by someone else, and I found out about it when it sold. I filed it under, "He knows the market better than I do." Under, "This is how it works." Under, "I came out ahead, so what is the complaint?" The complaint was not available to me yet. I would need another 18 months to see it. The cadmium orange came back in year 2. He had started requesting canvases for a group show. 6 painters. A thematic exhibition about color and the body. I delivered 7 pieces to the gallery in March. That was a Tuesday. The show opened on a Friday. On Thursday evening, Elliot called to say that 2 of my pieces had sold before the opening. To a private buyer who had seen photos of the installation and wanted them for a corporate lobby. The amount was significant. I was grateful. I did not ask who the buyer was. I did not ask to see the invoice. I found out 6 months later, by chance, when a graphic designer I met at a friend's dinner showed me a brochure for a hospitality brand, hotel interiors, high-end, the kind of brand that pays well for everything. In the brochure was an image. It was not one of my paintings. It was a photograph of a room in which a wall-sized print was hanging. A print of one of my pieces, the cadmium orange canvas, reproduced at approximately 3 times the original size, with a color treatment applied that shifted the palette slightly but left the composition unmistakably mine. The print had a credit. Original work courtesy of Elliot Marsh Gallery. not my name, not my copyright notice, courtesy of the gallery. I called Elliot the next morning. He said he would look into it. He called back that afternoon and said that the sale of the physical work had included a licensing agreement for reproduction rights, which he had handled as part of the sale because he had assumed I understood this was standard practice for high-value corporate placements. He said the licensing fee had been folded into the sale price I received. He said, and this is the part I turned over for a long time afterward, that he had been protecting me, that if he had explained all of this in detail before every sale, I would have gotten anxious and second-guessed things and lost the deal, and the deal was good for me. He had protected me from my own anxiety. He had managed the complexity so I could focus on making work. I stayed on the phone and listened and said I understood. I said I would need to see the documentation. He said, of course, anytime. Come by the gallery and we would sit down together. I said thank you. I hung up. I sat at my painting table for a while after that. The cadmium orange I had mixed that morning was still wet on the palette. I looked at it for a long time. It was the same color it had always been, a warm burnt tone with a slight reddish undertow that shifted depending on what you put next to it, a color I had spent a year learning to mix correctly. A color he had, somewhere in that gallery's filing system, licensed to a hotel brand without a conversation. I thought about what leaving meant. No representation. No access to the collectors he had built me into. No second gallery. The work I had made in the previous 2 years had found audiences because of his network, and that network did not transfer. I was not naive enough to think I could walk out of his gallery and walk into another one of the same caliber without a gap. The gap would be real. The gap might be years. I had a lease and a studio practice, and the specific kind of ambition that is expensive to maintain without a sales structure behind it. I thought about what staying meant. More of the same documentation. More decisions about my work made for my own benefit by someone who had decided in advance that my anxiety was the problem to be managed, and his judgment was the solution. More cadmium orange prints on hotel walls with no credit and a licensing fee buried in a sale price I had accepted as a gift. I had been told, somewhere in the early months, that the art world was not like other industries, that it ran on relationships and trust, and the implicit understanding that a gallery's reputation was the mechanism through which an artist's reputation was built and maintained, that a new artist needed to learn to work within that system before she could work outside it, that the alternative, trying to build a collector base independently, trying to price and place work without representation, was a path that some people took and that most of those people disappeared. I had accepted this framing so completely that I had stopped asking whose interests it served. He had not invented this framing. It was available, pre-existing in the language of the industry. He had just been fluent in it when we met, and I had mistaken his fluency for generosity. I did go to the gallery to see the documentation. I sat across from him at his desk. The paperwork confirmed what he had said. The licensing terms were in the sale agreement, in a clause I had not been shown before signing and had not asked to see. The clause was standard, he said again. I said I would be consulting with a lawyer about future agreements. He said, of course, that was completely reasonable. He said our working relationship mattered to him, and he wanted me to feel comfortable. He poured coffee. He used the word partnership 4 times in 20 minutes. I left and sat in the car for a while. The cadmium orange palette was at home, still not cleaned from the morning. Here is what I know now. The trap in this story was not the licensing clause. It was the 2 years before the licensing clause, during which the premise had been built, that he understood the market, and I did not, that his decisions were made for my benefit, that my discomfort was a liability to be managed rather than information to be listened to, that there was no workable alternative. Every one of those premises had been laid one conversation at a time, so gradually that I could not point to the moment when the relationship had changed. Because the relationship had always been this thing, and I had been the last to see its shape. That is the specific craft of it. It does not announce itself. It uses the language of generosity and mentorship and protection. It anticipates your needs just often enough to make you feel cared for, and it runs. Underneath all of that, a parallel structure in which your interests and someone else's interests are not the same, and the moments when they diverge are handled quietly, in documentation you were not shown, in decisions made on your behalf, while you were focused on making something beautiful. The cadmium orange is still on my current palette. I mix it the same way I always have. I own the rights to everything I make now. I have an entertainment lawyer, and I read every clause before I sign anything, and I do not work with anyone who describes documentation as anxiety management. The color is mine. It always was.